Sri Vasudeva uvacha. Viditosi bhavan sakshad. Purusha prakrithe paraha. Kevalanu bhavananda. Swarupa sarva buddhidrik. Vasudeva said, "My Lord, you are the Supreme Person beyond material existence, and you are the Supersoul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge, by which you can be understood as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I now understand your position perfectly." Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Within Vasudeva's heart, affection for his son and knowledge of the Supreme Lord's transcendental nature both awakened. In the beginning, Vasudeva thought, "Such a beautiful child has been born, but now Kamsa will come and kill him." But when he understood that this was not an ordinary child, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became fearless. Regarding his son as the Supreme Lord, wonderful in everything, he began offering prayers appropriate for the Supreme Lord, completely free from fear of Kamsa's atrocities. He accepted the child simultaneously as an object of affection and as an object of worship by prayers. This morning, on this very auspicious day, I received this very special garland. This was worn by Sri Sri Radha Madhava in Sri Mayapur Dham. And it was personally sent by the affectionate mercy of my dear god brother Janani Vas Prabhu. So I am accepting this as the blessings of a very dear and surrendered devotee of Srila Prabhupada, and pray at the lotus feet of this garland, at the lotus petals of this garland, that it may empower me to speak something in your service. Today we are celebrating Janamastami. By Srila Prabhupada's merciful sacrifice, all over the world, this festival is taking place. In practically every major city, hundreds, sometimes thousands, even tens of thousands of people are coming to the temples of Radha and Krishna to offer their hearts at the lotus feet of the Lord. Krishna is the Jagat Guru. He is the supreme spiritual master of all living beings. And he teaches us how to worship him. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord tells us the essence of all knowledge. Man mana bhava mad bhakto mad yajim dam namaskuru mam evaishashi satyam te brathina chani priyoshime. That we should always remember Krishna. We should worship him, offer obeisances to him, and become his devotee. In this way, we will come to him without fail. So it is for this reason that Krishna descends to this world, to give us this instruction, as well as to display such wonderful pastimes and such a beautiful form that it is quite natural to always remember him. Unfortunately, due to many lifetimes of sinful activities, what is the most natural thing for the soul has become very unnatural. In fact, very difficult. In this world, when a man sees a beautiful woman, or when a woman sees a beautiful man, their minds become infatuated. It's very difficult to take their mind away from such an object of the senses. The reason is because a tiny, infinitesimal little spark, through the perverted reflection of material nature, of Krishna's opulence, is present there. And yet we become uncontrollably mad. But the original source of all beauty, Krishna, when we try to think of his form, when we try to keep our mind attentive to his holy name, the name of the Lord is none different than the Lord. The name of the Lord possesses all the beauty, all the opulence, all the pastimes of the Lord and his abode. But yet our mind is wandering to such insignificant, petty, useless things that really don't mean anything. And we cannot even remember Krishna. Even when we're reading his pastimes or sitting in class like now, perhaps your mind is wandering towards some gossip or what it says in the newspaper, or maybe your legs are feeling some pain or some other bodily disorder. Insignificant things, anything. One little fly flying and landing on our finger can completely take our mind away from Krishna. How is that? Because we are in such a deeply diseased condition of material entanglement and bondage. And in Krishna consciousness, the means and the ends are the same. The ultimate goal of life is to always remember Krishna. And the way to achieve that is to somehow or other fix our mind on Krishna. Therefore, Krishna descends within this world to teach us the process. In this age of Kali Yuga, Krishna in his original form appears as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the role of a devotee to teach us how to be Krishna conscious. He gave us the Shikshastakam verses, which we recite every morning. And within these eight verses, the very basis of the whole philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is contained. Lord Chaitanya was always propagating humble service to the Lord and his devotees, very enthusiastic, ecstatic chanting of the holy names of the Lord, and preaching the message of Krishna consciousness to the fallen conditioned souls. And his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, has brought that message to all of us. And therefore, we are here today with very sincere and open hearts to offer our lives at the lotus feet of Sri Radha Gopinath, and to receive their mercy. We are reading from 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Maharaj Parikshit has just inquired from Shukadev Goswami about the appearance and activities of Krishna and Balaram. In the 9th canto, Shukadev Goswami has described the ancestral heritage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna and Balaram are the one Supreme Lord who appear in two forms for the sake of transcendental pastimes. Balaram is the original spiritual master, or the first expansion of the Lord, who serves the Lord in every possible way. And before attempting to enter into the transcendental mystery of the Lord's appearance and activities, we should know something about who is Krishna. Srila Prabhupada describes that we all know who is Mahavishnu. He is the great, great Lord who is lying in the causal ocean. The causal ocean is the perspiration from his own body. You perspire, you may be able to get one set of clothes wet. Maybe a few drops go on the floor too, but he makes an entire ocean, an ocean that is practically all pervading. By his exhalation, innumerable universes are generated. By his inhalation, all cosmic manifestation is destroyed. That is Mahavishnu. And simply by his glance, he impregnates the Mahatattva, or the material energy, with all living entities whose karma it is to be born within material existence. Therefore, Aham Bija Pratapita, he is the seed-giving father of all living entities. That Mahavishnu is a planary expansion of Shankarshan. Shankarshan is a planary expansion of Narayan. Narayan is a planary expansion of the Chaturvyuha, Prajumana, Aniruddha, Shankarshan, and Vasudev. And the Chaturvyuha is a planary expansion of Lord Baladev. And Baladev is an expansion of Krishna. He is Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. He is the source of all incarnations. And all the other incarnations are included within Krishna. Therefore it is said, Devarshi Bhutapti Nirnam Vitranam Nakinkara Nayam Nini Charajan Sarabhatmana Yasharanam Sharanyam Gatomukundam Bharatitya Karatam. That if you worship Krishna, all your debts and dues and other obligations are perfectly fulfilled. Your obligations to all the various incarnations, to the demigods, to your forefathers, to your relatives, to the people in general, to the government. Of course, we still have to perform our external obligations to some extent. But actually, when you fully surrender to Krishna, you're karmically not obligated to anyone or anything anymore. Why? Because if you water the root of the tree, automatically every part of the tree, the leaves, the twigs, the branches, the flowers, they are nourished. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna is the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from him. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So by worshiping and loving Krishna, everything is fulfilled. Whereas, if we do not surrender our lives to Krishna, we remain bound to the cycle of birth and death again and again and again. So Maharaj Parikshit is asking Shukadeva Goswami to explain about Krishna and Balaram. And he was so eager to hear. Please note, we're already at the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where this class is being spoken. That means the whole 9 cantos have already been spoken. Several days and nights, Parikshit Maharaj has not eaten anything, not drunk anything, or even slept one wink. Rapt attention. And yet he's eager to hear more. Hare Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami was so pleased. He congratulated Maharaj Parikshit that you have such a taste for hearing about Krishna. This is very good. Just as the Ganges flows from the lotus feet of Krishna and purifies whoever touches it, sees it, smells it, or even the breeze that comes off it, the Ganges purifies everyone. Similarly, the transcendental topics of Harikatha purify everyone who is in contact with it. That means the person who is inquiring becomes purified by this subject matter. The person who is speaking becomes purified by this subject matter. And all the general people in the audience who are listening, they also become purified. Srila Prabhupada once told us that he's writing these books and he's preaching for his own purification. Because Krishna is so supremely pure, that how could we ever become pure enough? The more we speak about Krishna, the more we hear about Krishna, the more we chant his holy names, the more we and everyone around us becomes purified. Therefore, Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya has taught us that this is para upakar. It is the supreme welfare work to broadcast the message of Krishna and the chanting of his holy name. Parikshit Maharaj asked, why was Baladev transferred from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini? And why was Krishna transferred after birth from Vrindavan to Gokul? And please tell me, why was Kamsa so demoniac and cruel that he was killing the children of his own beloved sister who he should be affectionate toward? And why did Krishna kill Kamsa, who was his own uncle? And also tell me the stories of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and his pastimes in Mathura. And why did he marry 16,108 queens in Dwarka? Please, I'm very, very eager to hear this subject matter. Sukadeva Goswami began his narration. That once upon a time, the Mother Earth was feeling a tremendous burden due to selfish, greedy, demoniac leaders traversing her surface. When a person lies, when a person steals, when a person is cruel to others, that sinful karma caused great pain not only to himself in the future due to karma, but to the earth itself. The Mother Earth is actually a type of an expansion of the Goddess of Fortune. She's Bhumi Devi. She's the consort of Varaha Dev. And this presiding deity of the earth, she's existing only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything we have on this earth is provided by her. Our bodies are provided by the earth. Our homes, our food, everything. There's nothing that exists within our material realm that is not coming ultimately from the earth. And everything she's supplying, she's doing it as an offering to the Lord. And she is our mother. And we are supposed to be her children. We are supposed to be obedient to live in harmony with her will. And Krishna is the seed-giving father. Yat karoshi yarasnashi yaj juhoshi tadasyat yatapasya sikonti yatat kurushumadarpanam. The will of the father is the will of the mother. That all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, all that you do, all austerities you perform should be done as an offering to me. Bhoktaram jagatapasam saravalokamaheshwaram suhridam saravabhutanam gyatvamam shanti mrichyati. Krishna is the supreme proprietor of everything that exists, and all austerities, all sacrifices, everything is meant for his pleasure. He's our friend. Follow him and we become peaceful. So Mother Earth is supplying such abundance, and yet greedy people are stealing from her, exploiting her, raping their own mother for their own personal interests. Yad yad acharati stresthas tad tad evetaro jana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvartate. What the leaders do, the common men follow. This was a time when the whole earth was overburdened with demoniac rulers. In fact, His Holiness Srila Hridayananda Maharaj, I met with him several days while I was in America this time. And on the basis of Harivamsa, Mahabharata, and other scriptures, he was explaining how actually demons from all over the universe, not just human demons, the people we're dealing with on this earth are just petty little human type of demons. But these were actually daityas. Daityas is the class of people who are descendants of Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Kumbhakarna, Ravana. It's their family members. They all plotted together from different universes and decided they wanted to conquer the entire universe. They wanted to destroy the demigods. And they wanted to use one place as their headquarters, where they would all be together to execute this incredibly diabolical conspiracy. And they chose the earth. Hare Krishna. So all these rakshasas and daityas from subterranean planets, from other demoniac planets, they all started taking birth on Earth. Hare Krishna. And now they were powerful. People like Jarasandha, Kamsa, Pralambasura, Keshi, Arishta, Chanura, Mushtika. These were real, all-conquering, powerful demons. And they had their plans to destroy Brahminical culture, to destroy everything good and first take over the earth and then take over the universe. So Mother Earth was feeling the burden of these demons trampling all over her. So she approached Lord Brahma in the form of a cow, because the cow is the holy mother of all humankind. And even the demigods consider the cow mother, because she provides milk, and the bull provides the fatherly symbol of production of grains and so forth. So Brahma, understanding that even he was helpless to help her, he called the other principal demigods, like Shiva, Indra, Vayu, Agni, Surya, Chandra, Yama, and all together, along with Mother Cow, they went to the shore of the ocean of milk. This ocean of milk is a very, very, very beautiful celestial place. Within the ocean is an island of the name Svetadvip, where the Lord, in his form of Kshirodakshai Vishnu, resides. They began to offer prayers. Specifically, one of the prayers that they offered was Purusha Shukta, being pleased by the sincere, heartfelt offerings of the devatas. The Lord appeared in a mystical way. Lord Brahma was sitting in meditation, absorbed in petitioning the mercy of the Lord. And the Lord spoke through a sky in the voice to Lord Brahma. Voice in the sky. And he spoke to Brahma. Then Brahma came out of his meditation and told the demigods, "This is the message that I have heard. The Lord has already acknowledged the sufferings that you are all undergoing. He's fully aware of the demons that have conquered the world. He's already made his plan to descend in his original form. Therefore, he is ordering all of you, the demigods and the rishis, to expand yourselves as planetary portions, along with your wives, within the Yadu dynasty." The Supreme Lord will appear as the son of Vasudev and Devaki, and he will kill this demon Kamsa and all others. At that time, Brahma returned to his abode, and all the demigods, they all carried out the order of the Lord. There was a great king whose name was Devaida. He had two wives. One was a Kshatriya and one was a Vaishya. Through the womb of his Kshatriya wife, he gave birth to a son of the name Surasena. And through his Vaishya wife, he gave birth to a son of name Parjanya. Surasena was coronated by his father Devaida as the king of Mathura. And Parjanya, being a Vaishya, went to a place called Gokul Mahavan. And having such very sweet nature and pure qualities. The gopas there made him the king of Braja, the king of the cowherd men and cowherd ladies. Mathura and Vrindavan are most holy places. Why? Because whenever Krishna appears within the universe, he always appears in Mathura and performs his most intimate loving pastimes in Vrindavan. Actually, Mathura and Vrindavan are non-different than the supreme abode in the spiritual world. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained very nicely how above this material existence is the Viraja, which is the border between material and spiritual existence. Beyond that is the Brahma Jyoti, the Paravyoma. And within that Paravyoma, or the spiritual sky, there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets where the Lord in his multifarious forms is residing, exchanging pure love with his eternal pure associates. But of all the Vaikuntha planets, the highest, where the most intimate affection of love is exchanged, is called Krishna Loka. That Krishna Loka has several divisions: Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. This Vrindavan is Goloka, the place where the Lord is worshipped in Madhurya Ras, in the Ras of inconceivable sweetness, where the love of the devotees is so pure and unconditional, with such deep affection, that affection covers the consciousness of the devotee from even seeing that this is the Supreme Lord. They see him as their friend, or as their child, or as their lover. This is the ultimate supreme destination of the soul. That same Goloka, which is described by Rupa Goswami to be like a 10,000 petal lotus flower, descends into this material world to facilitate Krishna's pastimes. There is no difference between Goloka and Gokula in this world. And similarly, there is no difference between the Mathura and the Mathura of this world. Vrindavan is the place where the supreme whole, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, descends into the finite world to give the infinitesimal finite living entity the opportunity to be embraced by him in his complete fullness of Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, the Lord of Vrindavan. In that world of Vrindavan, even one particle of dust is fully conscious, is fully reciprocated with by Krishna. In this material world, the dust is inanimate and forgotten. In fact, practically everything is neglected in this world. What is the joy of loving ecstasy felt by the trees, the grass, the plants, the animals, the birds, the fish, or even the human beings in this world? Everyone feels more or less neglected, empty in their hearts. But in the spiritual world, there is no such thing. Even the dust particle is fully ecstatic, feeling the love of the embrace of Krishna within its heart eternally. That is Vrindavan. And it is said that Krishna never ever takes one step out of Vrindavan. So Parjanya was the king of Vrindavan, and Surasena was the king of the Yadus, who's made their capital in Mathura. Surasena had a son whose name was Vasudev. And Parjanya had 5 children. The eldest child was named Upananda. Second child was Abhinanda. The middle child was Nanda. The fourth child was Sunanda. And the youngest child was Nandan. At a certain point, Parjanya Maharaj reached the age where he felt his children could take over his responsibilities of executing the affairs of Brajbhumi. So he renounced the world and made his eldest son, Upananda, the king of Braja. But Upananda was thinking that my middle younger brother, Nanda, he has such good qualities. He's a natural leader. Everyone loves him so much. Even I love him so much. So he personally coronated Nanda Maharaj as the king of Braja. Meanwhile, in Mathura, it is explained by Shukadeva Goswami that Vasudeva was to be married to the daughter of Devaka, whose name was Devaki. And on the night of their marriage, the cousin brother of Devaki, known as the son of Ugrasena, Kamsa, wanted to show his affection to his sister. So he said, "I will personally take the reins and drive your chariot to drive you, my dear sister, to your husband's place." He said, no, you are a distinguished king. You are such an exalted person. Why should you be driving chariot? No, I want to show my love for you. I will drive the chariot. Meanwhile, Devaka gave extraordinary dowry of many, many horses and elephants and chariots and gold and silver and so many things to Devaki and Vasudev. They began their journey. It was the night. Kamsa was cheerfully driving the chariot. Suddenly, a very grave voice spoke from the sky. It was an ominous sound. "Kamsa, you are a fool and a rascal. You do not know what is in store for you. You are so affectionately taking care of this woman, but the 8th child of Devaki will be the cause of your death." When Kamsa heard this, he was outraged with anger. With the left hand that was holding the reins of the horses, he released and he grabbed the hair of Devaki. Then with his right hand, he drew his formidable sharpened sword. He was at the verge of severing her head from her body. Poor Devaki, innocent woman, on the day of her marriage, for those ladies who have been married, you know how difficult marriage day is anyway. At that time, Vasudev desperately, with folded hands, began to appeal to Kamsa, trying to somehow hold the sword with one hand. He preached to him transcendental philosophy. He told him that, Kamsa, you are the pride of the Bhoja and Andaka dynasties. You are such a great hero and such a pious, saintly person. If you do this to your sister, you will ruin your reputation. Besides that, this body is temporary. When you take birth with a material body, death is certain. You cannot avoid it. Therefore, while we're living in this life, before death comes, we should act piously so that we have good karma, so that we can reap the results of that karma in our next life. However, if we engage in sinful, abominable activities just for the sake of maintaining this dying body, then we have to suffer so much in our future life. Why should we be attached to this temporary situation? The soul goes from one body to another body to another body, just like a traveler who goes along the road and he sits and gets some water somewhere. Then he travels on, and he goes to another place and gets some food, and he travels on in the same way. We are taking one body after another. Just like the worm on the tree is going from one leaf and then transferring to another leaf, and then traveling to another leaf. These bodies are just like the leaves. You're destined to give it up. Why should you engage in activities that will cause you such terrible, terrible suffering? And besides, Devaki is your sister. She deserves your affection and your love. She's harmless. She's never done anything against you. Why do you want to kill her? Please subsist from this heinous crime. But Vasudev saw that Kamsa was so deeply attached to his lust, greed, envy, pride, and illusions that he couldn't hear a word of his good instructions. Therefore, Vasudev made another plan. He began to think in his mind that if I promise my children to give to Kamsa, then I don't know what will happen between now and then, but I have to do something somehow or other to save the life of Devaki. Srila Prabhupada explains that Vasudeva was thinking that it is the duty of a human being to somehow or other maintain one's material body and health by whatever means possible, pious means. But if disease and death are inevitable, then one should accept it as the will of providence without being disturbed. Vasudev appealed to Kamsa that you have no danger from your beloved sister Devaki. It's her children. I vow to you today, every child consecutively that is born to Devaki, I will personally surrender that child to you to do whatever you want. Kamsa understood that Vasudeva is a man of integrity. He would never, ever go back on his word. Today in Kali Yuga, people's vows, people's promises are just considered no more valuable than water. But amongst people who have actually integrity, who understand what is Vedic principle, when you give your word,
You will die, but you will not violate your promise. So Kamsa released Vasudev and Devaki.
The first child was born. His name was Kirtiman. Vasudev, being a man of honor, personally brought little baby Kirtiman and presented him to Kamsa. Kamsa was so impressed that just to maintain the dignity of his vow, he's willing to sacrifice the life of his beloved son. His heart became soft. Kamsa said, "Vasudev, I'm very pleased with you. But actually, there's no danger from this child. It's your eighth child that I'm very concerned with. As far as I'm concerned, you can take this child back." So Vasudev brought Kirtiman home to Devaki. But in his heart, he was thinking, "I cannot believe him, because a man who cannot control his senses cannot be trusted." At that time, Sripad Narada Muni descended into the Mathura district, and he sent one of his representatives to the palace of Kamsa to announce his arrival. Kamsa was so pleased to hear that Narada Muni was come that he came out of his palace to greet him. He offered him a seat made of splendid gold and silver, offered him nice gifts and prayers, and worshiped Narada Muni, because he knew that Narada Muni was a very special person, and if you get his benedictions, then many, many wonderful things could happen. And he also knew that Narada Muni was Sarvajna. He knew past, present, and future. So if he gave him good services, Narada Muni would tell him important information. Hare Krishna. So Narada Muni said, "I'm very pleased with you, Kamsa. But I've come to inform you of something that I'm sure you will have much interest in. I was just traveling around the universe, and I happened to come upon Mount Sumeru. And while I was there, I found Brahma and various demigods having a secret meeting. And they were discussing how to kill you. And you know what they decided? That they would all start taking birth in the Yadu dynasty to kill you. Hare Krishna." Then Narada Muni left. Kamsa was thinking, this is very bad. He consulted with his ministers. Demigods are taking birth in Yadu dynasty. Narada Muni has told me like this. Therefore, any of these children of Devaki and Vasudev could be my enemy. So he ordered Vasudev and Devaki to be arrested and put in shackles in prison. One may ask, why in the world did Narada Muni tell him this? After all, devotees are supposed to be confidential about certain important subject matters. But Narada Muni had such higher vision. He understood who the children that would be killed by Kamsa were, and why they should be killed by him. And he also understood that by enraging Kamsa's wrath and by causing him to do more abominable activities, this would expedite the appearance of Krishna to come to kill him. Hare Krishna. So being an expert preacher, Narada Muni fulfilled his purpose. Kamsa was the son of Ugrasena. But he became such a tyrant that at that time he even ordered Ugrasena to be put in prison so that he could have all the power. A little background we should understand. What was Kamsa's past? Was he really the son of Ugrasena? This, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, is revealed in the book called Harivamsa. What happened is Vedavyas wrote the Mahabharata. But then the sages came together hearing Mahabharata and they asked Suta Goswami that Mahabharata is all about the Kuru dynasty, but there's very little about Krishna's dynasty. We want to hear about Krishna's dynasty. So Vedavyas compiled the Harivamsa as a supplementary to the Mahabharata, which specifically describes Lord Krishna's transcendental dynasty and his birth and appearance in this world. So there it describes that Ugrasena had a wife whose name was Padmavati. She was very, very beautiful. One time she went to a mount called Suyaman with her most dear friends. This mountain was so enchanting, especially that particular day. There were sweet breezes carrying the fragrances of kadamba flowers, and there was sweet chirping of birds. Padmavati and her friends were singing beautiful songs and playing instruments. It was a time when somehow or other Kamadev or Madana was shooting flower arrows all over the place. And everybody was very intoxicated with the desire to enjoy. One great king of the Daitya race, whose name was Drumala, a celestial demon, he happened to be flying overhead on his airplane. And he saw this beautiful mountain, Suyaman, and he landed his airplane. From his distance, he saw the wife of Ugrasena. He became infatuated with uncontrollable lust. He started speaking to his charioteer, "Who is that woman? Is she Sachi, the consort of Indra? Or perhaps she's Rati, the consort of Kamadev? Or perhaps she's Urvasi, the most beautiful of the Apsaras? Who is she? I cannot control my mind. She's irresistible. I must enjoy her." Then he told his chariot, "You wait here. I'm going to find out who her husband is." At that time, Drumala entered into a deep state of meditation. Because he had mystic powers, through his meditation, he could identify that she was the wife of Maharaj Ugrasena. Therefore, by his siddhis, he transformed his body to be identical to that of Ugrasena Maharaj. And he came before Padma, smiling and casting very affectionate glances upon her. So it was there in the forest that they came together through the act of sexual intercourse. after this activity was completed, Padma realized that the way he's embracing me and touching me is very hard, and Ugrasena touches very soft.
This is not my husband. This is a rascal. She turned against him and just lashed out like an angry serpent. She said, "You fool, you demon, you rascal, who are you? You have disgraced my chastity. You are not my husband."
For this, you are punishable by the laws of karma. I am an innocent woman. I am chaste and faithful to my husband. What you have done, you will have to pay a terrible price. You are despicable. You are the lowest, most sinful animal. You're a beast. You deserve to die and be punished in the hell of Yamaraj. Drumala replied, "Actually, my name is Drumala. And I didn't do anything wrong, because according to Daityas, we're allowed to do all these kinds of things. And not only that, you have read the various scriptures, where so many beautiful women like you who are chaste and faithful to their husbands, when a superior man comes to take them away, they go. There's no offense to this. We're Kshatriyas. Therefore, why do you want to be married to this stupid, foolish man, Ugrasena? He's just a finite being. He's going to die in a few years. I'm practically immortal. I have a whole kingdom beyond this earthly world. You come with me and you be my consort." She was disgusted. She refused his proposal. Therefore, he told him, "Because you began your address to me by saying kashtam, which means, who are you? Therefore, you will have a son named Kamsa. And he will be the most wicked, cruel-hearted of the demons." Padmavati told him in great anger that my husband, Ugrasena, he will have a descendant who happens to be the Supreme Purusha, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, and I curse that he will kill this despicable entity named Kamsa that is being born by your influence. So Kamsa was born. Kamsa was so cruel that each of the six consecutive sons that was born of Devaki, immediately he would kill them. The way he would do it is take them by the legs and smash them again and again with his mighty arms against a stone slab. And each of Kamsa's arms was as powerful as 10,000 elephants. So cruel. The background of these children is also very important to understand from the Srimad Bhagavatam. They are called the Sadgarbhas. Originally, there were six sons born of the great demigod sage, Marichi. His wife's name was Urna. And these six boys were beautiful, powerful, affluent. They had all good qualities and all opulences. They were very saintly also. However, at one time, Lord Brahma became overpowered by the illusory energy and approached his own daughter to enjoy her. At that time, Marichi and the other sages, they somehow said, "Brahma, Brahma, what are you doing? This is not proper." But the six sons of Marichi, they laughed at him. Because of that offense of laughing at a great personality, even when he was actually doing something he wasn't supposed to be doing, they committed Vaishnav aparad. And immediately they fell down into taking birth into a dynasty of demons. This story is very important because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Antya-lila of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat specifically cites this story to warn people against offending a devotee. Vaishnav aparad is so dangerous. It is the mad elephant offense. More than anything else, it can destroy all the merits of lifetimes of spiritual development. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that here was Brahma, a great Vaishnava, and he was factually doing something very wrong. And they didn't even criticize him. They just laughed at him. But because of Brahma's being so dear to Krishna, even in a bewildered state, they had to take birth as demons. They took birth as the grandsons of Hiranyakashipu and the sons of Kalanemi. This is the explanation of Haribamsa as well as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Sridhar Swami says that they took first birth as the sons of Hiranyakashipu and then another birth as the sons of Kalanemi. But consistent with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation, we will continue this narration. So these Sadgarbhas decided that they wanted to get benedictions from Lord Brahma. So without telling anything to their grandfather, Hiranyakashipu, they went under the water and began tapasya to Lord Brahma. For many, many years, tremendous tapasya, no eating, no sleeping, nothing. Lord Brahma was so much pleased by their austerities that he appeared before them. He said, "What benediction do you want?" They said, "We want the benediction that we will not be killed by any humans, that we will not be killed by the Gandharvas, the Charanas, the Rakshasas, the Brahmins. We will not be killed by any type of being that's on this earth or that's even in the celestial worlds. Even the greatest of the demigods, we will be immune from them." So Brahma gave this benediction. They became very happy. But then Hiranyakashipu found out that without his permission, they did this tapasya to Brahma. And he was angry as fire. "How dare you? Without asking my permission, you went to this demigod Brahma to perform tapasya and get benedictions from him? I have no more affection for you. You are my enemies. Why you don't come to me? Why you have gone to Brahma? Therefore, I curse you that you will die in the hands of your own father. In your next birth, you will become the six sons of Devaki, and your father, Kalanemi, will become Kamsa, and he will kill each and every one of you." Hare Krishna. Now the Acharyas explain that these six sons, they represent the anartas that are the greatest stumbling blocks in the path of bhakti. Lust, anger, envy, pride, greed, and illusion. They must be killed if we want Krishna to appear in our heart. And Kamsa represents fear of material existence. If we want to actually destroy these demons in our hearts and make our heart suitable for Krishna to appear, then we have to have proper fear of material existence. Srila Prabhupada, when he would preach Krishna consciousness, he would bring great, great emphasis on the miseries and dangers of material existence. No doubt the beautiful transcendental pastimes of the Lord are non-different from the Lord, and they can awaken our pure Krishna consciousness. But if we do not have proper fear of material existence and give up the desire for material enjoyment, then whatever else we do, Krishna will not awaken within our heart and reveal himself. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say about his Western boys and girls, he called them, he said, "Your problem is you are not fearful enough of Maya." Hare Krishna. We have to have fear of Maya. She's permeating the entire existence in Kali Yuga. And she has a plot to make you fall down at every second. Therefore, we should become afraid of sense gratification. Because if we surrender our hearts to the agents of Maya, she will steal away our propensity for devotional service. Thus, Kamsa represents fear of material existence. And if a devotee cultivates that fear, that will destroy the six anartas within our hearts. And then our heart is prepared for Krishna's appearance. So within the prison cell of Mathura, the Sadgarbhas of Devaki were atrociously slaughtered by Kamsa. Then Krishna called for his Yogamaya potency. Actually, it is further explained in this regard that before Krishna appeared, he called for Yogamaya and told him that the Sadgarbhas, the sons of Kalanemi, the grandsons of Hiranyakashipu, due to Hiranyakashipu's curse, they're laying in deep sleep in a bottom of a massive ocean of water. Yogamaya, you should take their spirit souls and their life airs and transfer them one by one to the womb of Devaki. And then you should know that the seventh child of Devaki will be my own first expansion, Shankarshan. You should transfer Shankarshan from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. And then you should personally appear as a baby girl in the house of Yashoda in Gokul. At that time, Rohini Devi, who was one of the wives of Vasudev, was sent by Vasudev to Brajbhumi in order to be protected by Nanda Maharaj. It is described that she went in a beautiful palanquin to Braja, and she was greeted by the Brajabasis with great, great love and affection. Vasudeva and Nanda Maharaj loved each other like the dearmost brothers. And similarly, Yashoda and Rohini loved each other like the dearmost sisters. When Rohini arrived in Brajbhumi, she was pregnant with Vasudeva's child. And therefore, Yashoda gave her very, very special love and affection. And with a great celebration, she was welcomed to Vrindavan, Gokul. During the second month of her pregnancy, on the order of Krishna, Yogamaya performed her service. It is described that it was about midnight. Rohini Devi was sleeping, and she had something like a dream. In this dream, she felt that she had a miscarriage. And she woke up, and sure enough, she did have a miscarriage. At that time, Yogamaya appeared again within a dream to her and told her that this is all my doing, that the first expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shankarshan, I am putting him in your womb in place of the other child. Now you take care of this child and be happy. From that day on, Rohini Devi was ecstatic with effulgence that surrounded the whole of Braja. Then Krishna, the Supreme Lord, in his transcendental pastime, personally entered into the mind of Vasudev. From the mind of Vasudev, he entered into the core of his heart. Vasudev became effulgent. From the heart of Vasudev, the Lord was transferred into the heart of Devaki. And then she became effulgent. When Kamsa saw the effulgence of Devaki, he understood the eighth child who was meant to kill me has come. Because Balaramji was transferred from the womb of Devaki to Rohini, Kamsa considered that the seventh child was a miscarriage. The eighth child has come.